Good hunting, everybody. This is the first of the Frank Fox Jungle Quizzes. Wild and woolly, dignified and academic, take your choice, but here we are. Frank Fox, the greatest of all the wild animal collectors. The man who can accept an order for a gray squirrel or a white rhinoceros without batting an eye. You've seen his amazing motion pictures. You who live near towns that have zoos probably know some of his old friends. But anyhow, my old friend, the mayor old friend, and your new friend, Frank Fox, the man who brings them back alive.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, friends. And I do have friends in every zoo in the United States. Every zoo in the world, for that matter. And I hope that all those animals that are living in the zoological gardens so happily are my friends. I know I took them from their old land and country where they'd lived. But there they had to fight for their 3 square meals a day. Now they have people like me to bring the meals for them. And I wonder who really won.
Well, you make it sound rather difficult, but that's not why we're here at the moment. I have something like 20 young would-be wild animal tamers, or tamers from St. John's Orphanage in Brooklyn, in the careful care of Brother Thomas Law, who would like to ask you a few questions, Frank. Can you stand the shock?
Oh, I have. Try me this time.
Well, they seem to think that they know a few things about animals that, have escaped you. Anyway, they think they have a few questions that you may not be able to answer.
Well, I hope they have. I really mean that. For it's always good to learn that one doesn't know everything about something as big as God's out of doors. Still, they've got to be good.
They'd better be not too good. Frank, the first inquisitor, and Brother Law has just picked the slip bearing his questions and his name out of the hat, is Richard Hand. Dickie, come on up and take your chair right here in front of Frank Buck, will you? You take your question. Richard Hand has 2 questions, and Brother Thomas Law and myself decided beyond equivocation, by virtue of having picked the slip out of the hat, that you ought to know the answers, Mr. Buck. If you don't know on your own, all right, take it away.
All right, Richard.
What snake is the deadliest?
What snake is the deadliest? Well, there are a lot of very deadly snakes. I think the king cobra is really the deadliest because he's the biggest of all the poisonous snakes. His poison isn't really any more venomous than the fleur de lance or the very big diamondback rattler, but he has so much more venom in his poison sacs, but he's really more deadly than any of the others.
And what does the orang-utan look like?
What does he look like? Well, he's a big, sort of a man-like ape, with long red hair, red fur. A big full-grown orangutan has an arm spread of, 8 or 9 feet from fingertip to fingertip, and a weigh over 200 pounds. Tremendous animal and very ferocious when they're full-grown. They come from Borneo and Sumatra.
What makes them so hard to catch?
Well, because they're big and tough. The young ones are not hard to catch. As a matter of fact, they're very easy. But a big, full-grown orangutan is a tremendous job to handle.
By the way, Mr. Buck, how do you pronounce that? Orangutan or orangutan?
Orangutan.
Oh, he has the correct pronunciation.
The word is of Malayan origin. In Malaya, orang means man, and utan means forest, meaning man of the forest.
Well, that's something I learned. Thank you. Well, you did pretty well at that, Dick. Now it's your turn to take it, Frank. Just wait a minute, Dick. Stay right there. Mr. Buck's going to ask you a question, so try and think up a tough one. All right, take it.
Well, he certainly had me hopping that time.
And while you're thinking about it, let's see. We'll remind all you contestants on this first of Frank Buck's Jungle Quizzes that each one of you will receive a copy of Frank Buck's new best-selling book, All in a Lifetime, especially autographed to each of you by the author, so make those questions tough. Frank, are you ready now?
Sure I am. Now, Jimmy, my boy,
the name is Dick.
Oh, Dick, I'm sorry, Dick. I got you mixed up with one of the other boys. You had a little fun with me. Now it's my turn. What do you call a litter of newly born dogs?
Puppies?
Well, but wait a minute. That isn't the whole question. The young of the dog family are called puppies. That's quite right. But I want to know something else. You can take either one of these 2 questions. Name me an animal in a dog family that does not have puppies. Or name me an animal that is not in the dog family that does have puppies. You understand that question? Name me an animal in a dog family that doesn't have puppies. If you're going to call something else besides puppies. Or name me an animal that's not in the dog family whose young is called puppies. Those young are called puppies, sir.
How about Dickie, Finkie?
Kangaroo.
No, kangaroo doesn't belong to the dog family.
What's the correct answer, Mr. Buck?
Well, a seal is not a member of the dog family, and it has pups.
That's the information. How about a hand for Dickie, boy?
Now, the other question.
All right.
He wins $5. Is a fox, which isn't the dog family, and has cubs instead of puppies.
A fox has cubs instead of puppies. All right, Dick, you won $5 for answering one of Mr. Buck's questions correctly. And now, let's dig into the old hat and see who's next on our question list. Well, it's Paul Teske. Paul, where are you? Come on up. Let's give him a hand before he starts. He's written down two beauties for Frank. Let me assure you right now that no one except myself and the youngster who wrote out these two questions and Brother Law, who picked the questions out of the hat, have seen this list. I'm going to give it right back to Paul Rice now, and he and Frank are going to get together on their own. All right, Frank?
What is the name of a bear that does not drink water?
The name of a bear that does not drink water. Well, now, Paul, I think you've got me stuck there. There are many varieties of bears. There's a bear out in Malaya that drinks very little water. It's called the honey bear. It is entirely on honey. Polar bear drinks very little water because it swims so much in the water so much that it absorbs a lot of water through its skin. But as for a bear that never drinks water, I'm afraid you've got me stuck.
Where'd you get that question from, Paul?
Well, I saw it in the book already, and it's Koa. C-K-O-A.
Koala bear. That's a koala bear of Australia. It lives in the eucalyptus forest.
Good for you.
Eucalyptus forest in Australia. And it's a very rare variety of bear and a very handsome bear. It's the model for the toy teddy bears we have in this country. We use it as a model for making those bears. I believe that that's a mistake because I think that I'm sure the koala bear does occasionally drink water. If it lives on eucalyptus leaves, and if they're kept as pets, as they are occasionally in Australia, they feed them pudding they make up and put a little bit of eucalyptus oil in the pudding so as to give them their sort of their natural food. But I'm sure they drink a little bit of water occasionally. However, if the book told you they don't drink water, perhaps they don't. You stuck me with a question.
You wouldn't call a koala bear cocoa by...
No, hardly. The koala bear is a very interesting animal.
Your second question, Paul.
Is the zebra white with black stripes or black with white stripes?
Now there's a question. There's a fine question. There are several varieties of zebras. Now, the zebra called the Grevy zebra, which is the largest of all zebras, has an absolutely even number of stripes on its body. I mean, the white stripes are exactly the same size as the black stripes. And the stripes are all the way down to the hoof. As far as the Grevy zebra is concerned, there is absolutely no difference. He could be either a black animal with white stripes or a white animal with black stripes. But the zebra known as the Chapman zebra, that is the most plentiful of all zebras, has white on the belly and white from the knees down. So he has more white than he has black. For that reason, Encyclopedia will say that it's a white animal with black stripes. Now, on the other hand, the mountain zebra of South Africa has more black on it than it has white. But he's a very rare animal and seldom ever seen. So the encyclopedias tell you that the zebra is a white animal with black stripes.
A white animal with black stripes. That's the zebra. Why do they call him zebra over on the other side of the Atlantic?
That's merely the British way of pronouncing them, just as you pronounce a patent leather pair of shoes, they pronounce them patent leather pair of shoes.
All right, how about a hand for Paul on that one? And now, Mr. Buck, it's your turn. Why don't you ask Paul some questions?
Well, Paul, so far you seem to be winning a little bit of this argument. Now, let me see what we can do about that. There are three parts to this question. First, can you name me an animal, a mammal, that cannot walk? It used to be the basis of a great fishing industry. Yes, they fished for mammals.
Whale.
Whale. Correct. That's the right answer. And that's the easy part of the question. Now I want you to name them for me, a creature who can walk, but isn't a mammal.
A creature that can walk and isn't an animal?
Now he can walk.
A seal?
A What? No.
No.
The seal is a mammal.
It is a mammal.
How about giving him another crack at that, Mr. Buck?
Well, an animal that you had the animal that can't walk and is a mammal. Now you've got one that can walk and is not a mammal. And he has walks on four legs. There are three or four different animals of this description, very much alike.
What are the things they wrestle with down in Florida? Maybe that'll give you a hint.
Crocodile.
That's right.
Very good.
Crocodile, alligator, lizard, all that, those, that type of animal, or mammal, or not mammals, really. They're reptiles. Now, the third part of this question. Birds are supposed to fly. You can either name me one bird that cannot fly, or a creature that is neither bird nor insect, yet completely at home in the air.
Bat.
That's the second question. You're quite right. A bat or a flying fish. Both of them fly well and are not birds. Now, what about the bird that cannot fly?
Penguin.
That's right.
Very good.
Penguin, ostrich, or emu, or cassowary.
Well, good for you, Paul.
Very clever.
You answered three questions, and you get $5 apiece for each question you answered. So you can take home with you $15. Good for you. And I suppose, before we take on the next of these beater downers, you tell us something about the question that another one of these lads has submitted. His name is Kisali, and the initial is J, so it sounds like Jimmy. Is that right, Jimmy? Joseph, come on up. And before we let you ask your question of Mr. Buck, I'd like to tell our listening audience that she's recovering from a tonsillectomy. All right, that explains everything. Here's your question. Joseph, I'm going to ask you a question to Mr. Buck. Go ahead, first one.
Which is the rarest bird in Africa?
Which is the rarest bird in Africa?
Or in the world.
In the world. Well, that's sort of hard to answer because there are so many very, very rare birds. There are a lot of rare birds in Africa. There's the secretary bird, which has a plume on the back of its head and hangs down the back as if it had a quill behind its ears and stands on high, rather longish legs, which is a very rare bird, seldom ever seen outside of Africa. And there are several varieties of very rare hornbills, the turacos, what they call plantain eaters, are all very rare. That's rather difficult to tell you, the rarest animal in Africa, or the rarest animal in the world. Now, down in New Guinea, they have birds of paradise, many, many varieties that have never been outside, never been brought out of New Guinea. And so there are rare birds all over the world. And what is your idea about the rare bird? When you asked me that question, when you made up that question, what did you have for an answer to it?
Well, I thought it was the bird that carries around on his...
You know what? Your tonsils make your voice a little bit low. Will you speak
a little
louder
now?
The bird that Juno carries around in a mint. I don't remember his name.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know that.
I'm sure there's usually eyes.
Uh-huh. No, I don't know what that would be at all.
Which animal has the best sense of smell?
Which animal has the best sense of smell? Well, a lot of animals have a very keen sense of smell. The carnivorous animals don't smell so very well. I tell you, the sense of smell of an animal depends on whether it has good eyesight or not. Now, you take a tiger or a leopard, they have wonderful eyesight. They can even see in the dark. So their sense of smell isn't so keen. They don't need that so much. But take a rhinoceros. He can only see clearly about 15 to 20 feet away. So his sense of smell is very, very keen. And his sense of smell is gauged largely by their ability to see well, whether they can see well or not. So there are many of them that have a very keen sense of smell. And you could hardly say which one has the best sense of smell because there are plenty of them that have just as good a sense of smell as the other one. Which one do you have an idea has the best sense of smell?
I have no idea.
Well, I would think probably the rhinoceros has about as keen a sense of smell as any of them.
Will you ask your second question now, Joseph?
What's the second question?
That was a second. All right, then it's Mr. Buck's turn to ask you some questions. I believe he has some on that yellow sheet of paper at his right hand there.
Well, let's see what we have here. Can you give me the titles of three famous jungle pictures produced by Frank Buck?
Frank Buck's Jungle Cavalcade.
That's the last one. That's the one that's playing now at the Palace Theater. Now, they have produced one that became famous all over the world. Made the greatest success of any wild animal picture ever made. Remember the name of that? That's the name that I use as sort of a slogan. A lot of people call me by that name.
B, you know, we introduced the program with that, Joseph.
What do people call me mostly? I mean,
let's ask the audience. I think the boys know. What is it, fellas?
Bring him back alive, Frank Buck. That's it. Bring him back alive. Now, can you name any other one, any other motion pictures that I produced, wild animal pictures? One called Wild Cargo. You remember another one, boys, any of you? Well, that's right. Wild Cargo, Fang and Claw, Bring Him Back Alive. And now, the current one is Jungle Cavalcade.
Well, that's fine, Joseph. You named one picture, so you get $5. Let's give Joseph a hand, boys. And now, Mr. Buck, there's a rather solemn, somewhat strange question submitted by Brother Law, who has these young wild animal tamers in his charge, and it's just this. Will a wild animal really die for its young?
Well, that isn't difficult to answer. Through thousands of years that there have been jungles, mothers have been giving their lives so that helpless youngsters might live a little longer. I've seen it happen with hen pheasants or quail right in this country. I've seen it many times in the mad live-or-die life of a jungle. Come between a she-animal of any of the larger varieties and her young, and you're attempting suicide. But the story that sticks closest in my mind is the one about a monkey mother. She's just a common rhesus monkey. There are thousands of them all over India. I was down in southern India on one of my trips a good many years ago, and Ollie, my old number one boy, and I were going along a jungle trail. There's a little bit of clearing on one side. And suddenly we heard a rustle in the jungle and a sort of a plaintive cry. And a monkey came loping across the clearing just as fast as she could go. And behind her, a leopard. Going so fast, it's almost like a yellow streak was after her. Well, he lunged across the street after her and caught her just as she... across the trail. And he caught her just as she got over the trail. A little clearing. And as he caught her, just before he crouched down on her, I saw a little object sort of leave her. It looked as if she threw something. Well, this leopard went right off into the jungle. He carried this mother monkey away in his jaws. I went over and part of the grass kicked around, and I saw a little tiny baby monkey lying on the grass kicking and squawking. It wasn't more than about 3 or 4 inches long. It was probably not over 10 or 12 hours old. Now, it's the custom of the baby monkeys to hang on to their mother's breast. They put one little hand on in her hair on either side of the arms, and another little hand down on the two sides, and hold on to their fur, and she carries them all through the jungle like that, carries them everywhere. And she nurses them that way. And until they're pretty good size, able to get around on their own, they hang on to the mother. So anyhow, here was this leopard chasing the monkey mother. And he got so close that she knew that she was going to die. She knew he was going to get her. There wasn't any way in the world for her to get away. And when she could feel that hot breath of the leopard on her back, the last thing she thought of was to save her baby. And just as the leopard crouched down on her, she evidently tore the baby loose from her chest that he was hanging on and threw it as far as she could. Well, I went over and picked the little baby up, and my boy wrapped it up in a cloth he had and stuck it in the pocket of his jacket. And we took it on back to camp. And I got a hold of a medicine dropper, and we got some tin milk and canned milk, and fed it milk with a medicine dropper. And it grew up, got along fine, was a great pet around the camp for several months. But that was a great lesson to me of how these wild, primitive mothers take care of their young just as well as human mothers do. Here, the last thing that monkey thought of, the last thing that occurred to her was that she knew she was going to die, but she might be able to save her baby. And she threw it from her. And, of course, she didn't save it because I happened to be along and picked it up. If I hadn't, it would probably lay there and starve to death. Well, but we took it back to camp and brought it up, and I had it for many, many months around with me.
Well, Frank, that's a grand story, and I think it answers definitely the question, will a wild animal really die for its young? Before we go on with the rest of our questions, would you happen to know where that little youngster you saved, that monkey, is today?
Why, he's in one of our big zoos. I think it's either New York or St. Louis. You see, I bring so many animals back that I sort of forget just where they are, but I remember after that trip, I sold quite a big colony of monkeys, both to the St. Louis Zoo and to the New York Zoo. And that little fellow was in the group, so he knew I were one of those two. I could probably tell if I go back to my office and look up my records of where these shipments went. But I'm sure he's in one of the two zoos, and he's probably a fine, healthy, big monkey by this time.
Sure, just someone else that doesn't have to work for a living. All right, now, Mr. Big Game, bring him back alive. Here's your next opponent. He just took his questions out of the hat. George Priori. George, come on up. Let's give him a little hand to start things off. Very questions, George. Fire them away.
All right, George, now what have you got?
What birds eat the food left over in the alligator's mouth?
What birds eat? Well, there's two different varieties of sparrows. They're sort of little sparrow-like birds that live in the jungle and run around where the crocodiles are and get into their mouth and pick when they eat food, they leave a lot of the little particles around their teeth, get in and pick them out of their mouth. Two different varieties of birds that do that. One is called a dial bird, D-Y-A-L, and the other one is, I don't just know what they call it, but it's got a native name, which is Buong. I don't believe there is any scientific name for it, because it's a bird very little known.
What is a pilot fish?
A pilot fish is a fish that hangs on to a shark. Sharks in their wild state swim around the water, swim around the ocean, and one or two fishes with a sort of a sucker arrangement on top of their head come and attach themselves to the sharks and swim around with them.
That's right.
All right, Mr. Buck, now suppose you ask your question. Hit it out.
Well, now, let's see. Asia, Africa, and Australia are three different continents. I'm going to give you five animals. I want you to name the one that can be found in each of these continents. And here they are. The gorilla. Where is the gorilla found?
No. Africa.
That's right. Found in Africa. Now, the giant panda.
This is a rural continent.
It's found on one of the continents. See, there's Asia, Africa, and Australia. It's found on one of those three continents. Panda, the great panda, the giant panda. You remember there's been a lot of publicity about them lately because with the first ones ever brought to America came here very recently. One to the New York Zoo and one to the Chicago Zoo. And since that, there have been others brought here. But during the New York World's Fair, there was one out at the fair. They called it Pandora. It's a white and black bear-like animal. It's had a lot of publicity lately. There's been a lot of the papers about them. Very famous animal.
Except the Australian?
No, it comes from Asia. It comes from up in Yunnan. It comes from up on the border of north, western China and Tibet.
Well, that's one you missed and one you got. How about one more, Mr. Buck?
Now, the dingo.
Australia.
That's right.
Australia, very good.
Yeah, that's it.
That's $10 you carry away with you there, George. And now, our next questions are going to be asked by Donald Blake. Donald, come on up here. Here's your chance to win $15. Take your questions and ask them of Mr. Buck. Sit right down there at the microphone. Go ahead.
How many apes have grown to maturity in the whole world?
How many apes have grown to maturity in the whole world? Oh, that couldn't possibly be the answer because there are four varieties of apes. The apes are the gorillas, the chimpanzees, the orangutans, and the gibbons. And there have been, of course, through the thousands of years, there have been millions of apes born and grown to maturity in the jungle. So you couldn't possibly tell how many have reached maturity.
All right, how about asking your second question?
Now your second one.
Is there a mammal that flies? If so, what is it?
Is there a mammal that flies? Yes, there's the bat is a mammal. We just had that question before.
Yes,
there are several varieties of flying lizards, and there are flying squirrels. There you are.
All right, now, Mr. Buck, your question's right there on the yellow sheet of paper. In two parts, you'll find them.
Where do elephants die?
The elephant's graveyard.
Well, elephants die wherever they happen to be. You know, there's a story about elephants all going to one graveyard. going way up into the mountains and finding a secluded spot where they all die, that's just bunk. That's not true at all. Elephants die wherever they happen to be sick or where they happen to have to die. The reason that they had that story originally was because you seldom ever find a dead elephant in the jungle unless it's been shot or something or it's been killed. No more than you find a dead deer or a dead wolf in this country. Wild animals always go to a secluded spot to die. If a deer gets sick, it goes away into the darkest ravine it can find. If a wolf gets sick, it leaves the pack, or the pack chases it out. It won't have it in the pack. And it goes into a hollow tree or into a rock cave or somewhere to die. And the elephants are the same way. All animals go to a secluded spot to die. And where elephants die, of course, in tropical countries, the process of decomposition is very fast. And there are so many thousands of vultures and insects crawling that the body is devoured very soon, and even the bones decay and are done away with in a very little while. So the elephant's bodies are never found except where they've been shot or killed or something. And that's how that story started about there being an elephant graveyard, but there really isn't any such a thing.
Well, that clears up a lot of misconceptions. Now, how about your second question, Mr.
Now, how do pythons kill their victims?
That's a snake, isn't it?
Now, python is the biggest variety of snake. It's the largest of all the snakes. How does he kill his victim?
Well, he crushes
them,
Frank.
That's right. He crushes them. That's right. The python is a constricting reptile. He constricts. Now, a python will get hungry. Now, they only eat about once every 6 weeks. And they'll crawl through the jungle, sometimes for miles, until they come to a game trail, and then they grab an animal by the throat or somewhere and twist their body around him, and inside of 2 or 3 minutes, got him squeezed to death.
Well, very good. Now, you can take $5 away with you, but don't be too sorry, because you can still show your locker key at the art theater and get in for 5 cents. Well, that about winds up this first session of our Frank Buck Jungle Quizzes, and we want to thank Brother Thomas Law and all the young fellas from the St. John's Orphanage in Brooklyn who came around and ask their questions of Mr. Frank Buck. I'll bring them back alive, and we hope they learned as much as we did, and we'd like you all to tune in again for our next session of Frank Buck's Jungle Quiz.
Well, I'm here for you, very smart, very intelligent, and you did a swell job.